good morning. This is a commutation phase two hearing for Mr. Stephen Grant, and his Arizona corrections number is 089989, and it appears his federal number is 40942-008. Present here in Arizona, we have the Board of Executive Clemency, and I'll give the names of the members for the record. We have the Honorable Michael Johnson, the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, our Board Chair, the Honorable David Neal, the Honorable Louis Quinones, and my name is Gail Rittenhouse. I'll conduct the hearing. We also have in the room today from the Maricopa County Prosecutor's Office, a representative, Mr. Stephen Shaver. And on the phone, we have, in addition to Mr. Grant, we have Mr. Billingsley, his counselor at the Bureau of Prisons. We have the federal public defender, Mr. Moore, Brian Moore. And we're trying to get, and we've placed a call and asked for a return call from Mr. Grant's doctor. That would be Dr. Andrew Stock. So, Mr. Grant.
Yes, sir.
Are you able to please give us your full name and your ADC number, your Arizona Corrections number, if you can remember that, sir?
The Department of Corrections?
Yes, sir.
Is it 409-42-008?
Okay, and that's for your federal number, and I'm showing your state number as 089989, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, sir. Mr. Grant, we're conducting a commutation phase two hearing today, and this is based on your application that is indicated. Your application is based on imminent danger of death, sir. And we've had a hearing in October, on the 18th of October, and at that point the commutation was not recommended, and I believe the issue at that time was that you have two sentences, or you have sentences in two different jurisdictions running concurrently. You have state convictions, and then you also have some federal convictions. And the issue at the time, if I recall, was that it was unresolved whether it was unresolved how to proceed, because this board does not make the decision. This board makes a recommendation to the governor. And what we're not able to determine that day is how the application process would be coordinated between the two entities, that whether the state commutation has to be granted first and then the federal commutation request proceeds, and we weren't able to resolve that, sir. Is that your recollection?
Yes.
Okay. And just a little bit about this, about your case. So this case involves a series of armed robberies, and there were banks and retail stores involved in this. And these all occurred in 2006. And according to information that we have, it appears your earned release credit date for these crimes is January 22nd of 2032. And community supervision end date of 2034. So, and that's, I'm just placing that for the record. And we had hoped to talk to your doctor today, and we hope he'll be able to return the call. But the issue still remains, as far as I can see, Mr. Grant. I mean, we were provided a copy of a policy, a federal policy, about compassionate release. And as I'm reading this policy, a good deal of it doesn't really apply to your situation, but there's part of it that talks about the initiation of the request for extraordinary or compelling circumstances. And it says here in this policy that, and I'll quote, ordinarily the request shall be in writing and submitted by the inmate. So, Mr. Grant, have you submitted a request for a compassionate release or reduction in your sentence in writing? Have you submitted that, sir?
My lawyer did.
Okay. And is your lawyer Mr. Moore?
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Mr. Moore, have you submitted that? Because we don't have a copy of it.
I've submitted the application that you're looking at to the state of Arizona. It's my understanding, and I believe Dr. Stock will be able to clarify, that the federal application, the BOP application for compassionate release, may not even be entertained by the federal authorities while there is this hold outstanding from arising out of the state sentence. And therefore, the need is to obtain commutation of the state sentence before the federal application may be entertained. And that is part of what Dr. Stock, the medical director at the BOP facility, is supposed to explain this morning.
Okay. Well, we may still come on the line. Do you know where that appears in this policy? Because I've looked through this policy, and I cannot see any place where it says that the state, that all the detainers or things have to be resolved before a federal commutation or reduction can occur. It does say on page 13, the Bureau of Prisons has no authority to initiate a request under 18 U.S. Code and some citations on behalf of state prisoners housed in Bureau of Prisons facilities. So,
well, the BOP hasn't initiated it. Mr. Grant has initiated the state request. I'm not aware of any particular provision that explicitly provides in the federal procedures that the state request must go first. My understanding is that the way the BOP is interpreting and implementing its own regulations is requiring that the state go first. Again, Dr. Stock is the expert on that.
Okay. And you can probably see our position. We're going to be writing a letter to the governor making this request, and you know, I have really nothing to show the governor to say this is how this works. I have no policy I can point to or...
Well, again, the testimony of Dr. Stock is it's our intention today that would be dispositive and that would clear up any of the board's questions. I guess from my point of view, and I guess the question is who goes first matters. I mean, he has two sentences. They both, you know, action needs to be taken by both sovereigns. And, you know, whether one goes first, whether that action is, you know, concurrently taken. Even if the BOP were today to grant him a compassionate release, the BOP could not, well, the BOP would then have to release him to Arizona authorities.
Right.
And then this process would have to start anew with the Arizona authorities. And the issue, of course, is there's no time to do things sequentially like that.
Exactly.
And Dr. Stock has also intended this morning to explain the medical condition. I think the board had some questions about that as well.
Right.
So he's really critical today, and he's the reason we refiled, because he assured us he would be available.
Okay. Well, I mean, we could try, we could put him on a hold and try to call him again and see if maybe he's returned to his office and just hasn't got the message.
Or at least get to
maybe
him.
That's what we should do.
Yeah, he reconfirmed with us recently that he would be available telephonically this morning for this hearing. So that was on December 23rd that he reconfirmed that with our office.
Well, why don't we just do that? We'll just put you on hold momentarily, put everyone on hold here, and we'll try to get Dr. Stock again on the line.
Thank you. We'll do the same from our end.
Okay, thank you.
And yes, the Billingsley, the counselor may be able to help too, what we do.
Yes.
Yeah, Mr. Billingsley?
Oh, you just walked out, sir.
Oh, you just walked out. Okay. Well, he may be able to help us find Dr. Stock as well. I'm not sure. But if he can, Mr. Grant, please ask him to help us too.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, we need everyone to stay on the line. We're going to go ahead and try to reach Dr. Stock again, but please stay on the line, okay?
Thank you, yes.
Yeah.
Dr. Stock?
Yes, ma'am. I called him on the radio. He said he was headed to his office. I don't know how long it's going to be. I'm hoping it'll be just a minute or two.
Okay, good. Because we just tried and we got no answer, and we couldn't get anyone to even answer the operator's number within the medical unit there. Nobody picked up, so they must be really busy today.
We have a lot of phone calls coming in.
Yes, oh, I'm sure. Okay, well,
Could you ask him that when he gets to his office, he can notify him on radio and he can call him back?
Okay, Mr. Billingsley, is there a way to radio him and ask him to let
yes,
you
ma'am.
Know?
Yes, ma'am. Stand by for a second. I'll give him a call.
Okay, so we can call.
Council Billingsley, Dr. Stock.
Pharmacy.
Council Billings, the doctor, stop.
Paper pharmacy.
Council Billings, the doctor, stop.
Go for
stock 5236. That's fine, what is that?
Go for stock.
Yes, sir. We should get back to your office.
Be back here right now.
Thank you.
Anderson, I do see a provision in the BOP regulations that says all detainers and holds should be resolved. And this is on page 11 of the regulations that we included in our packet to the board.
Yes, I do see that, sir. Thank you.
Okay.
So that would suggest that the state issue has to be resolved before the application can be made to the federal. Is the way you see that?
That's the way I see it, and it's my understanding of how they're interpreting it. We'll get some clarification, hopefully, here.
From Dr. Stock, right.
We've had one of those before. The feds won't do it. It was the same thing. Yeah. It was, I don't think it was the feds. It was a state institution.
Oh, a different state. Mr. Grant? While we're waiting for Dr. Stock. So your proposal is to live with your brother in El Mirage?
It's either there or my sister-in-law. She'd already sent the notarized letter in.
Okay, I'm not sure we've got that, because I don't know that I have that, sir. Where's your sister-in-law live?
In Texas.
Oh, in Texas, okay.
Registered nurse.
She's an RN. Okay. Let me keep looking for that letter. We have a really large packet, but.
While you're waiting, sir, Chance, did you ask your sister-in-law to participate in the hearing today, sir?
I had no idea the hearing was even going to take place today.
You had no idea that the hearing would take place today?
No, I was never told anything.
Mr. Billingsley, what was the communication change here? Because he said he had no idea that the hearing was taking place, or what? How was he supposed to know that it was going to take place today, sir?
He didn't, sir. It probably slipped my mind with so much going on here at the medical center.
Okay.
I do have like 200 inmates I have to see about. And this floor that I'm on, I have a hospice unit and a child care unit where mostly the inmates can't move or can't get out of bed or can't get around.
So is he in the hospice unit at this point? I'm just asking questions while we're waiting.
I got a hospice unit. He's in a unit that's not locked down anymore. That's not locked down at all because it takes constant care. The nurses and the inmates. So his unit he's on now, it stays on lock the whole time because he's on constant care right now.
How do you find that for lay people that he's on constant care at all times, sir?
Due to the fact that side that he's on and his health wise requires him to have constant care from nurses.
So, just in theory, now this is not a commitment by any chance, but just in theory, if state of Arizona decided to. And that being the governor decided to honor his request for an IDD, is he well enough to get from North Carolina to Arizona?
What the Bureau would do, if he got on his compassionate release, we will get him to Arizona to be by our ambulance. He's being escorted home by staff.
And let me understand, Mr. Grant, you indicated that you wanted to go to be with your sister-in-law then in Texas. But what about Arizona? Do you have anything in Arizona that you, where you would reside, sir?
Yeah, I got my brother down there.
Okay. Hold on one moment. We're going to try to get Dr. Stark again. It's the same number, I think.
She said it's not the same number.
Mr. Grant, so if you can just hold on, we're going to get him back on the phone along with Mr. Moore. So just hold on, sir.
I apologize, I wasn't here. I was seeing a patient.
Yes, sir. We understand, sir. Okay, Mr. Billingsley, you still on the phone, sir?
Yes, sir, I am.
Mr. Moore, you still on the phone, sir?
Yes, sir.
And Dr. Stark, you're on the phone, sir?
Correct.
Okay, for the purpose of Dr. Scott, we started the hearing, and on our end here in Arizona, the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse is conducting this, chairing this hearing at this time, so the next voice you hear will be that of the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse.
Very good.
Thank you, Dr. Stark, for joining the hearing. We've talked a little bit about one of the main issues that we're facing is that this board does not make this decision. We make a recommendation to the governor. And in order for us to do that, we have to have certain pieces of information. And we were just discussing the fact that it's not really clear, since Mr. Grant has sentences running in two different jurisdictions, we're not really sure who goes first, and we need to be able to explain that to the governor. So what's your understanding about which, we see a small, Mr. Moore found a sentence, and I had noted in the policy, that says that all detainers, it's on page 11, if a pending charge or a detainer cannot be resolved, an explanation of the charge or conviction status is needed. So it appears that the state conviction may need to be resolved before any sort of federal consideration can be granted. Is that your understanding?
Yes, that's typically what, when we are going to release somebody, we wait to hear about the detainers, whether it's an ICE detainer or a state detainer, and then kind of go from there, because that, on our end, is going to determine where we can release him to. We can't release anybody until we have a firm, setup of what's going to happen when they get out of here, especially if they're as sick as they tend to be when they get these reductions in sentences, so we don't just turn the guy loose on the street.
Right.
We've got to have, processes in place so we know they're going to home or live with their brother or wherever it may be, or even to a hospital. Right. So once those detainers are dropped, then we typically will proceed from there.
Okay, and by detainer being dropped, that would be the governor would commute the sentence. And,
yeah.
And then that would drop the detainer and we could proceed. Okay, sir. Okay, so that somewhat resolves that issue. So Dr. Stock, can you tell us about Mr. Grant's kind of his prognosis?
Yeah, so I spoke when you first contacted me, I spoke with our oncologist who gave me the update from the cancer part. That's really what's going to shorten his lifespan. So it's a 46-year-old with stage 4 colon cancer that has failed multiple lines of chemotherapy. And basically, as of June, a CAT scan, June 2018, a CAT scan showed progression, a progression of disease. They tried one more round of chemo on one of the newer chemos, and even in November, they still are showing progression of this metastatic disease. And because of that, you know, we can't say exactly, but he most likely has a life expectancy of less than 6 months. Typically, what I personally see with these is usually around 2 to 3 months. Sometimes they last longer, sometimes they last shorter. We can't say for certain. Right. But with this type of cancer, with as rapidly as it's progressing, with as many lines of chemo that he's failed, you know, we can say that his life expectancy is less than 6 months.
Okay, sir. So his treatment at this point is just considered palliative, not treatment for recovery?
Correct.
Okay, sir. Any questions from fellow board members on Mr. Grant's medical condition? And Dr. Stock, just for the record and for my information, you're the clinical director?
Yeah, I'm the clinical director of the Federal Medical Center at Butner, North Carolina.
Okay, all right, sir.
I would have asked a question at Grant Elementary, but when did this 6 months start, Dr. Stock? You know, you said that this last one was back in June, so I knew it had been 6 months ago, and he's still surviving. I'm just trying to get in my mind, because we have to have a real justification for the governor. We just can't say, Governor, please let him go. And I'm just trying to make sure that if I'm going to put my name on the ladder along with my distinguished colleagues, that we know what we're doing. So when did this actually start, sir, in your opinion, sir, that we're talking about 6 months?
Yeah, according to what I got this email from oncologists on the 21st of November. So that's kind of when we would start that 6 month clock. They've still been trying active, chemo back in June, and between June and November he failed with like three different options. So is at this point, whatever he's receiving is just for palliation.
And you are basically sure, based on your experience with this, which I'm not personally, but you are almost sure that that the state must be proactive before the federal government can take any action at all?
I'm as sure as I can be. I spoke with our legal department, and they confirmed that on these cases that the state would release your great clemency or do the reduction, drop the detainers for us to proceed.
Is it common practice? The question may not be a fair question, but is it common practice if the state dropped the charges and everything that the federal government is going to automatically honor the state's action taken by the state, sir?
I can't speak for all cases. I've only been doing this for 4 years. But what I've seen, typically when the state drops the detainer, then we'll go through our process of the reduction in sentence. And those are usually, that's taken into consideration, so it usually carries a heavier, consideration when we're doing that. I'm not on that committee. It's done at our central office. But typically if that clemency is granted, the cases, and this is less than probably 10, I'd say probably the majority of them were granted as well. It just takes time.
But you, at your level, you have no contact at all with his family or anybody who might be supporting him. Am I correct, sir?
Personally, I have not spoken with his family, but our social workers, when they look into reduction in sentence, part of that is, where is he going to go? Who's going to take care of him? Does he have Medicare? Is he eligible for Medicaid? Sometimes there's VA benefits, that kind of... Pretty much everything that a social worker would normally do. I have not, I don't know how far along that's been. oftentimes when there is a reduction in sentence, when we look at it, one of the first things we look at, is there a detainer or, you know, is there something else in another state? And that's kind of, they often stop there. However, for our purposes in the medical center, when we get these guys that are pretty sick, if there's any chance they're going to get out, there, our social workers try and line up all of the issues that we need, you know, where they're going to go, insurance, that kind of thing.
So the only thing that you would do, and I don't mean the only thing, but the only thing that you would do if the governor granted clemency, that is the governor of Arizona, you would just return him to Arizona, then it becomes Arizona's responsibility to make the recommendation to you at that point. So I'm just trying to figure out what the process is here.
Yeah, typically, this one, you know, we haven't done many of these where there was a clemency involved and a reduction in sentence after that, but the reduction in sentence is once, you know, we don't grant the reduction in sentence until we have a firm plan of action in place, so that we're not just releasing these guys at the local emergency room and saying, now it's your problem. We make sure that we have everything set up so that there is a continuation of their care, whether they're going into hospice, whether they're going home, whatever that may be. So in one other case where we actually had an immediate release for a gentleman in Arizona, we actually kept him, much to the judge's dismay, about 3 months longer because we did not have a place set up for him to go until 3 months later we got everything lined up. And a lot of that was just inter-agency communication, getting that squared away. So on our end, even if they have a reduction or an out-and-out release, we still are responsible to make sure that they get the care that they need and are going to receive that care when they get home or wherever they may be going.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Stock. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Thank you. Dr. Stock, is Mr. Grant ambulatory?
You know, that's a good question. I haven't seen him in probably about a month, so I can't answer that at this point. I can get you an answer and email that to you later and call you back with it, but I haven't seen him personally.
Okay. And I'm just, you know, Mr. Billingsley has indicated that if this reduction were to be granted and then the federal reduction is also granted, that Mr. Grant would be accompanied by a federal employee probably to wherever his destination is, and that the feds would get him there by ambulance or whatever. Is that the practice?
Yeah, typically, however the inmate can travel, that's how we send them. We send them frequently. We send them either with just by themselves if they're good to go that way. If they need, you know, just some assistance, we'll send it, you know, an officer with them or somebody with them just to accompany them. If they need, like, you know, mild medical, we've sent paramedics with them. We've sent people on air ambulances. So depending on the level of care that they need, that's how we'll send them to where they're going.
Okay, so it's more of a medical consideration, not necessarily a security consideration.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, they're released, so it's not going to be, you know, he's a dangerous society. Somebody is up high has deemed that he's okay to be released, so anybody that is going to go with him is going to simply just be to accompany him, to make sure he gets to where he's going. You know, if it's an air ambulance, we have sent staff with an air ambulance. We don't always have to if they, you know, if they're just dropping him if they're taking him from Raleigh to, you know, wherever, and there's an ambulance waiting on that end, they'll just do the transfer that way. But we can send somebody. It's not an issue. We've done that before.
Well, just ordinarily, just on behalf of the citizens, we usually leave a probation in place so that the person is still under, I guess it would be parole. So we the person is still on parole, and they're still under the department's or the provisions that were provided by the sentencing judge. So we don't necessarily totally call the individual released. They're still under criminal justice supervision.
Well, we did have an inmate that we ended up keeping a little bit longer because he needed. He was going from Raleigh to I think Seattle, and he needed oxygen, so we set that up. He did have after he was released, he did have to report to his probation officer within 48 hours. We had to, you know, let them know he has been released, but he's still in the hospital, and so they kind of just waited until we said he's, you know, we put him on the plane now. So you can start his 48 hours now. So whatever, you know, that's up to the probationary people, but we can work in conjunction with them to make sure that he's, you know, that he's aware of where he needs to go.
So perhaps something could be coordinated, just as when an inmate is released from prison in Arizona, they have 24 hours to report to their parole office, or there's a designated time. They have to be there by 10 a.m., within the next day or something. We could.
Yeah, that's what we've had here. And, you know, that's just the one that I remember.
Okay.
You know, because we had to reset that 48-hour clock a couple times because his discharge from the hospital kept getting delayed for various reasons.
Okay, sir. Mr. Canales, did you have a question? You looked like you might have a question brewing there. Okay. Any other questions for Dr. Stock? Mr. Johnson?
Dr. Stock, I did understand that you said he had stage 4 colon cancer. Can you elaborate some more on what his medical condition is?
So he's got a tumor, tumors in his colon that even though he's had surgery and chemotherapy, the tumors continue to spread. They've spread into his liver. That was seen in August of 2017. So in each of the CAT scans we've done, August of 17, November of 17, and then June of 18, each one has shown progression of cancer to the point where the most recent one, it's metastasized to the liver, and I think they said also the lung, but I'm not for certain on that. I can pull up the report here and give you that second here.
Okay, and also, Doc, you said actually starting November, you would say he had less than 6 months. Here, before we make a recommendation to the governor, you have to have it under 3 months, but I 3 months or less. And I do understand that you said that he had stage 4 colon cancer, he had less than 6 months, but typically you said they usually go 2 to 3 months.
Yeah, and I'm looking at his CAT scan, the last CAT scan. So he's got significant worsening metastatic lesions in his liver. There's some lymph node involvement in the retroperitoneum, which is the area kind of behind the liver, wrapped around the kidneys. He's got tumor in the layers of fat that surround his intestines. And he's also got, he does have it in his lung too, worsening pulmonary metastasis. I would say he probably has less than 3 months looking at that. So 3 to 6 months would be the range, but I would say probably closer to 3. But I don't have that magic eight ball or the crystal ball to decide when exactly it's going to happen. But this much metastatic disease, typically people don't last more than 3 to 6 months.
So also, Doctor, I probably need to ask Mr. Grant this too, but I'm looking at a report that's dated November 6th of 2018, and the provider was a Dr. Carton.
Yeah, that's our oncologist.
Okay, and there's a statement that he has in here that says that basically, Mr. Grant states he is not ready to go to hospice and is happy to stay on the fourth floor. Should he change his mind, he can notify me or his primary team. Prognosis is very poor. So the reason I'm looking at that is it sounds as though Mr. Grant, does he really want to leave that facility or what's the situation? Not,
I
probably
can't
have that,
I don't
that
know.
Question. Mr. Grant?
Yes.
So, Is it out to ask him, Mr.
Sure, sure, please.
So, Mr. Grant, there's a statement in a report that's dated November 6 of 2018 that basically says that you were perfectly happy to stay on the fourth floor and that you're not ready to go to hospice.
Can you go to hospice? Could you ask me?
That you're not ready to go to hospice.
No.
You don't want to go to hospice, sir?
No, sir.
Okay. So...
Not in this environment.
Uh-huh.
Not in this environment.
I'm not... So, what would be the situation if you wouldn't stay with your brother?
I would really like to go home and be with my family. I mean, if something turns for the... worse, I'd rather be home with my family. It's not the total environment I want to be. If something goes worse, you know, if things get bad and I pass out or whatever and I'm done with, I'd rather be home with my family rather than in this environment.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir. So, Dr. Wright has a question for you, too, sir.
Well, I've worked with Dr. Stark. Dr. Stark, to the best of your knowledge, have you, I don't mean necessarily you, but anyone there in your facility, made contact with our medical people in Arizona as it relates to...
I did speak with... I was one of your medical doctors. I can find in my email. Contract Monitoring Bureau. I emailed him on 12/6 and we spoke on the phone. And I gave him an update at that time.
Okay. I'm going to ask him. It seemed to me that this is a little more complicated. But this is the first time, to the best of my knowledge, that we've had a situation like this in Arizona over the past 5 years, and maybe even longer than that. And therefore, I guess this is a learning process for board members as well. You know, we're dealing with medical, we're dealing with some social issues, we're dealing with some monetary issues, we're dealing with some family issues, and I just want to make sure that all of these are tied together, and I'm just a little confused at the moment whether we've tied everything together if we made a recommendation to the governor and if the governor accepted our recommendation, because we made a recommendation to the governor. He's not obligated to accept it. I want to, you know, just you to be aware of that, and just as we are, because he would have to do an investigation based on what we've given to him, and they may find something different than what we, the questions that we're not asking us. I think that's one reason that we're asking so many questions here at this particular time. So, but to answer that question, you have had contact with our medical people at the Department of Corrections here in Arizona. That is correct, sir. Am I correct, sir?
If Dr. Robertson is with the,
Dr. Robertson is with the Department of Corrections here in Arizona. We are familiar with him, yes, sir.
Yes, and that is correct.
Okay, and he, okay. I don't think I have anything else for you, Doctor. I may have something that I want to ask Mr. Grant just a little later. Thank you so much, Dr. Stott. Stop. You're just so helpful, sir.
My pleasure, anytime.
Thank you. Mr. Grant?
Yes, ma'am.
If you're approved to come and live with your brother in Arizona, has your brother, we don't have a letter from your brother, your brother's not here, we don't have him on the phone. Has he agreed that you could come and live with him?
Yes, ma'am.
And what would be the address where he would be staying, do you know?
I have to get it. I know he wrote it. He's done sending it in probably a couple weeks ago. But I don't understand why it wasn't, anybody hadn't received it yet.
Right. Well, but you know he lives in El Mirage, Arizona?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So you would propose to go live with your brother in El Mirage, Arizona. Who else lives in that house?
Him and his wife.
Oh, just him and his wife. No, there's no children there.
He's got two older children that live there. Or one older children that live there.
And are they over 18?
Yeah, like 21, 22. Okay.
So he has some adult children who live there too.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so it's the brother, the wife, and some adult children. Okay. And you also mentioned Texas, so you said you have a sister-in-law in Texas who's an RN?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and
not with cancer. She's another type of RN for something else.
Okay, but she's an RN. And as far as Texas, sir, it would be a little complicated if your sentence is commuted. And this board always recommends continued community supervision, whether that's, would you be just a parole officer checking in on you? But if you were to go to Texas, it might be a little complicated by possibly an interstate compact or some way to provide supervision there, sir. So that one might not be an option. It might not be an easy option, let's just put it that way, sir.
I understand.
Yeah, because there'd be the additional jurisdiction to deal with. As it is now, we have to figure out between two jurisdictions. Okay, so does any board member have other questions?
Just very quick.
Dr. Ray has a question.
This was Mr. Grant. I believe you came before this board when, in October this year?
Yes, something like that.
Yes, sir. Health-wise, how are you doing? Are you better or worse now than... forgive me for asking these questions, but health-wise, are you feeling much better now? Are you feeling worse now? What health-wise, how are you doing, sir, since you came?
I'm a little worse.
You said a little worse? What can't you do now that you couldn't do when you came before this board in October, sir?
It was a little worse, sir.
I mean, can you feed yourself, sir?
Yeah, yes, I can feed myself.
Can you go to the restroom on your own, sir?
Excuse me?
Can you go to the restroom on your own without assistance from others?
I mean, I can get up and walk if I got my cane. You know what I mean? I'm fine with that. I can get up and I can make my bed, you know, stuff like that. I can feed myself. Maybe the restroom and all that stuff. Yeah, I can do all that stuff.
Now, 7275.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Thank you, members.
Any other questions from board members? Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Are you still on the line? Did you want to add anything, sir?
No, I don't have anything to add. If there's any additional information that the board wants, or you know, after the hearing, if there are additional questions that arise, I'm available to help in any way to provide that or get answers.
The one thing I may need to contact you about is just sorting out which are the federal sentences and which are the state sentences, and it's not really clear in what we have here, so I may need to contact you for that.
I'll be happy to assist in any way that I can.
Mr. Johnson has a question.
This is for Mr. Grant. When you came before this board, I believe it was in October, did you have your sister and your brother, were they going to be supportive? What was your situation there? Mr. Grant?
Yes, sir.
When you came before this board and we didn't recommend it to the governor in October, what was your situation with your brother and your sister, the brother in El Mirage and your sister in Texas?
They were good.
Okay, did
sister and all the time.
Okay, did they have any statements or make any appearances before this board at that time, sir?
No, because, like I said, we didn't even know this hearing was going to take place, and this is all caught off guard right here.
What about in October, sir? Back in October when you first came before this board?
this one time back in October. See, the packet I filled out, or my attorney filled out, it was mailed in. It was filled out, but it just says fill the packet out, you know, the best you can, blah, blah, blah. My attorney filled it out, sent it in, and mailed it in. It didn't say anything on the packet that somebody would get a hold of us as far as, I guess, let us know on a hearing date or anything. But that's as far as I knew anything. So while we sat around waiting for a date, I didn't know anything of a date or anything until I was told, hey, and then that was mailed in. But we never knew of a date or anything like that.
So I don't have that report I can find us from back in October, other than that you came for the board and it was actually the board denied to send it over to the governor's office. But did you, at that time, we're still in this kind of the same situation. We didn't have any support letter from your brother or your sister during that period of time?
Excuse me?
We didn't have any support letters or information from your brother or sister during
the... Right, because it didn't say anything on the packet. So we need a letter from your brother or your sister-in-law as far as they need to, I think. That was my brain again.
Okay, the reason that...
We didn't know if any type of date or anything as far as they need to be at a hearing or anything like that.
Okay.
It says, hey, where are you going to live at and stuff like that. That's all we knew.
So to your knowledge, sir, why did the board back in October not send it recommended to the governor?
Say that one more time.
To your knowledge, in October, what was the reason the board gave you for not recommending to the governor?
Yes, say it one more time. I couldn't get closer to the phone here. Go ahead.
So in October, sir, when you came before this board, to your recollection, what was the reason the board gave you for not recommending it to the governor?
I don't remember.
Okay. Well, the reason that I'm asking you that, sir, because it's usually a general practice on this board when we have these and there's no family and no letter, that we discuss that and ask those questions. And I would think that these same questions that we're asking you now, those questions would have been asked of you back in October.
Right. Well, this time around, I didn't know of the hearing coming up. I didn't know. We knew when we applied there was going to be a new date, right? But this time around, nobody notified us, Mr. Grant, you have a date about this time, blah, blah, blah. I wasn't informed on that this time either. So I couldn't tell them, be ready on this such and such date, time, so we can get a hold of you, because this is when you got to be ready by the phone. Wasn't aware of anything. Nobody told us, hey, you got a date today, so be ready by the phone, so wasn't aware of it. We knew one was coming up, but we didn't know exactly when.
So I do understand you say you wasn't aware that you're having a date today, but you were aware that from the previous hearing that the board would ask, you know, for those letters or some of that information. I would have thought that whether you knew when the exact date was or not, that you would have at least had the family send something in so that you could have that ready. I mean, you knew you were going to have and come back before this board.
Right. My brother already had it ready and had mailed it in.
He hasn't.
Now, why nobody received it, that part, I don't know.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir. I thank you, Mr. Collins.
This is Ryan Moore. I'm the grant lawyer in Tucson. And,
yes, sir.
You know, the application, the focus of the application is on the medical situation. And that's what we've been trying to get the board information on. And for the second hearing, got Dr. Stock to appear. There's really, I mean, Mr. Grant saying that the application isn't clear, that we needed to prove where he could live. And that makes sense to me, having filled it out. It does ask where he would live, but doesn't really say that we need to, you know, bring some evidence or bring a person. But we're able to do that. And again, I would just urge the court or the the board that if there's additional information, whether a phone call, a notarized letter, anything I can provide, we'll provide it immediately in order to facilitate the process.
That would be helpful, sir, because, you know, the governor is going to have the question of where in the state of Arizona is this person going to be released to, should he grant the commutation. That, you know, that would be an important piece of information. Mr. Quinones, you had a question?
Yes. I recognize that we've asked this from a lot of different angles, but Mr. Grant, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Just for my own clarification, am I correct that in both hearings, you weren't aware that the hearing was going to happen?
I knew it was going to happen, but didn't know when.
No, I'm sorry, that when you were notified that today was your hearing, so to speak, or that day, you did not know that day that the hearing was going to happen. You applied, and you knew there was going to be a hearing, but you were surprised by both hearings. Is that correct, both of them?
But
okay,
I didn't know the date was going to be today.
Okay. And the previous hearing, you didn't know the date was going to happen.
Right.
Okay. You only knew that you applied.
Nobody told me the package of hearing was going to be happening on that day.
Okay.
It says, fill out this package as best you can, send it in, and there will be some... There will be some probably medical questions that will be asked, and that was it. I was never told, hey, you got to have these medical papers. You got to have these medical papers or anything like that. So everything else was caught off guard.
But granted, I agree with my colleague, Mr. Johnson. After hearing the first hearing, I think it might have been clear to you that we needed some clarification as to where you would live should this board grant clemency, but I just wanted some clarity that you were surprised by the actual hearing date in both cases.
All right.
All right, thank you. No further questions.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Moore, did you have anything else to add?
I have no additional information to add, but does the board have a preferred method by which I may immediately provide information from the brother?
I think that, and I'll ask our chairman, but I think if I get in touch with Mr. Moore and request information, would that be appropriate? As I prepare the packet for the governor, that if Mr. Moore is able to provide some specifically the address and a statement from the brother that says he's willing for Mr. Grant to come and live there. Would that be appropriate, Mr. Chairman?
I think if we were to do that, we need to continue this hearing. I would not want us to go on the assumption that we're going to accept it simply because his brother said that he can live with him. There may be some other consideration that this board might ask. They have some other questions in addition to that. I think that what happened, if I understood correct from the gentleman here in the state of Arizona, that they only looked at it from a health standpoint. I said, Mr. Moore, he only looked at it from a health standpoint. But we look at it in addition to the health, we have to look at everything, where he's going to live, how he's going to get there, how many people live there, any felonies living in that house. There are a number of considerations that this board have to take into consideration before making a recommendation to the governor. And I would suggest maybe if this board sees fit, you can continue the hearing or we can make a decision today. But I would not want us to go on the assumption that he's going to automatically be released simply because his brother said he can live with him, because we're going to have information, and of course the Department of Corrections, they have to do their investigation or whatever. And I think that this is something that we really need to think about before we give any indication how this board feels at this particular moment, unless this board feels that it's ready to move forward, and if the board feels that it's ready to move forward and make a recommendation to the governor by majority vote, that can be done, or we can continue the hearing until further information is provided to this board.
So if we were to continue the hearing, could we expedite that so that that occurs early next week? And could we make sure that Mr. Grant is informed of when the hearing is going to be occur? Because that's important to me, is that Mr. Grant knows and can, even if it's if his brother's only available by telephone, that would be fine. But just so we can actually speak to his brother, could that be done? Could it be expedited? Placement on the schedule.
I'm not going to guarantee that it will be placed next week, but yes, it can be expedited. But I would also point out the fact that I don't know where the communication gap is. While he did not know, I don't know whether it's Arizona or North Carolina who did that one, because we actually don't know, because this should have been cleared somewhere between Arizona and North Carolina, and I'm not sure where. Well, I believe, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that Mr. Billingsley did state that it was North Carolina because they had so many patients that they just didn't get around to telling them. My words, not here, but that's the interpretation that I got from what Mr. Billingsley said earlier. And we cannot tell North Carolina what to do because North Carolina is an independent jurisdiction. We have no control over North Carolina.
Mr. Quinones, you had
I just wanted to say, it would seem that at least a portion of this process is simplified, though, because should this board vote to recommend clemency to the governor, the Bureau of Prisons has to do all the appropriate caseworking after that.
Right.
And it sounds like that they're actually doing a pretty thorough job of it. So I'm not saying that we wash our hands of it, so to speak. I know we have a responsibility. All I'm saying is it would seem that the social worker piece is in good hands should we make that recommendation.
It does sound that way. It does sound that way. Any other comments?
Well, we do not have a... maybe I'm wrong here, so please correct me, Madam Chair, other board members. But we do not have copies of that social work report.
No,
at this particular I cannot do it on the basis of what they might have put in writing, because we just don't have a copy. I think that this whole thing is this whole package, as large as it is still incomplete. In my opinion, it's just not, because if we had to work on the social work, if we had where we're going to live, if we had everything, then the board could immediately make a decision up or down. But we just don't have sufficient information. And as one board member, I just don't feel that we have sufficient information. But I would also, Madam Chair, with your permission, I would also want to listen to the state of Arizona.
Absolutely.
With your permission.
Absolutely.
Well, with his permission.
So at this point, Mr. Shaver has patiently sat here and waited. Mr. Shaver's with the Maricopa County Attorney's Office and wants to make some statements. So, sir, if you can come up to the... And is that green light on the microphone? There's a green light on the base of it.
It is, ma'am.
Okay, good. And if you can just start by stating your name for the record, thank you.
This is Deputy County Attorney Stephen Shaver. I represent the Maricopa County Attorney's Office, the agency which convicted Mr. Grant of the underlying offenses subject to the sentencing hearing. Honorable Dr. Wright, members of the board, I would just like to speak briefly about some history of the inmate at issue. Specifically, he indicated today that as to his physical condition, he is able to feed himself, he is able to walk with a cane, able to make his own bed, and able to go to the bathroom by himself. And I think it's a common sense inference from that he still has the strength in his arm to wield a handgun. So I would just ask the board to consider what has happened on the last times that Mr. Grant was released from custody. And these dates are from Arizona Department of Corrections records He was first released September 12, 1994. Approximately seven months later, committed an armed robbery in February 1995. Was released for that offense November 29, 2000. Approximately 2.5 months later, I committed a forgery in February of 2001. I was released for that offense January 15, 2005. Approximately 15 months later, committed a string of 9 armed robberies beginning in April 2006 and ending in May 2006. That would be the 4 federal armed bank robberies and 5 armed robberies that were prosecuted here in the state of Arizona. Given that his condition does not render him enabled to commit more crimes once released, albeit acknowledging the very serious nature of his condition and the prognosis given by Dr. Stock today, the state or the Maricopa County Attorney's Office would recommend that this, would ask that this board vote not to recommend commutation to the governor at this time, and would ask that the board consider the items that I've placed on the record today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shaver. Any questions for Mr. Shaver from the board? Okay, thank you, sir, and thank you for being so patient while we continue the hearing. Okay, at this point, I would ask for any remaining input from board members. I think I tend to agree with Dr. Wright that we still don't have enough information, and I apologize to Mr. Grant, because I know he's waiting and he's applied twice already. But we just need to know, this board needs to know, as Dr. Wright stated, where you're going to live, the fact that the person who lives owns that home and lives there is willing for you to come and live there. How are you going to get from where you are now in North Carolina to here, or to where you want to live, and those kinds of questions. Additionally, possibly some clarification of how exactly the sentences were made. And Mr. Shaver clarified later, there must be 5 Arizona sentences, and but that remains to be clarified too. Exactly what are the sentences? Which ones are Arizona? Which ones are federal? Exactly which sentences would we be would the governor be commuting if this board were to recommend that? So I believe, you know, again, based on the information that we have today and the information that we don't have today, I would like to suggest that this hearing be continued and to be rescheduled as soon as reasonably possible. I mean, Dr. Wright cannot guarantee a date in particular, but that for certain that Mr. Moore and Mr. Grant be notified of the hearing in advance, of the date of the hearing, so that they can be prepared with people here, if possible, that are willing to testify. And at a minimum, people can provide a letter to the board that provides the information that we're requesting. Mr. Quinones, did you have input?
Yes, I just wanted to say I agree with that, and I certainly made some commentary on the BOP's caseworking. But I think Dr. Wright hit the nail on the head. We can't make a good faith recommendation without complete information. Because I recognized, even delayed, that if information was coming to this board after this hearing, that we really weren't deliberating over it in the open. So, yes, I agree with that.
Yes. So, Mr. Johnson.
I'm going to say that I agree, but I also feel as though, you know, we've had this hearing once before, and there's no doubt in my mind, although I don't have a direct recollection, but I'm sure that these issues would have been discussed. And Mr. Grant states that he was aware, and that, you know, he knows the family, that the brother has a letter that was sent in, even though he didn't know the exact date and time when the hearing was going to be, that this hearing was going to be coming up, and that information should have been here at the board from the last hearing that he actually had, and he acknowledges that he knows that information. And I think that the application itself, and we review many of these applications before, and we have them where the people moving
what the application asked for is, question that it asked here? Said, if the board recommends a commutation of sentence to the governor, what is your plan for release? And, you know, that's just not a good release plan to say, I go live with my brother, house in there, Mirage, and we've seen these before where they just don't have a good release plan, or a good plan of where they state that they're going to be. So, you know, I look at the application as being incomplete. Although he says he wasn't aware of the date, he was very much aware that was some information that we were going to be asking and need from his previous hearing that he actually had here at the board.
Okay, thank you, and very good point, Mr. Johnson.
And I think, Madam Chair, I think the board has to take everything into consideration. As you know, that not only do we take medical into consideration, we also take criminal histories. I remember quite well a recent one, Mr. Johnson raised some issues about criminal histories, and I think that it's a little more broader than just medical. That's the only thing that I'm saying. It's much broader. We just can't say to the governor, make a recommendation to the governor. We got to make sure. We're going to make a recommendation to the governor that we are aware that each of us individually will make that decision within our own hearts. As you know, that many times it's not a unanimous vote on the part of board members. Sometimes we have those who support and others who do not support our board. But I think just to move forward, if we can just reschedule the hearing without, and I'm going to put it this way, without saying to Mr. Grant what he needs to say to the board. We do not tell anyone what they need to say to the board. That cannot be, but based upon the application and the questions that's been asked, I think that certain answers, he has to come up with those himself. I would not say to him to tell his brother to send a letter. I would not say to him to tell somebody else to send something. He needs to get whatever needs to come to this board without us doing that, because that's the one thing we never do. We never tell an inmate what he or she should or should not say to the board. Then it would not be fair. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Egg. Then I'm going to make a motion that we continue this hearing, and I've written to the earliest possible date, and that the inmate and his attorney is notified of the date in advance so they can be prepared with whatever they feel they should have. And that will be my motion.
Second.
Agree.
Mr. Neal. Agreed, Mr. Johnson. And Dr. Wright?
I'm going to disagree because I think that we have enough to make a decision.
Okay.
But the majority wins.
All right. So, Mr. Grant?
Yes, ma'am.
The board's decision today is that your hearing will be continued, and you've heard all the discussion. We will ask that our staff here reschedule this for the earliest possible date, and that you and your attorney will both be notified of the date of the hearing. Board members will just maintain all their materials so that we have everything close at hand and ready to go. And we will reschedule this for another date, so when a decision will be rendered that day, sir.
What's your date is that now?
The date will be provided. We don't have a date at this point.
Okay. Can you notify Mr. Billingsley up here of a date, and he can notify me?
We'll notify your attorney, Mr. Moore.
Yes, ma'am.
And then Mr. Moore can carry out the notifications.
Okay.
Okay, sir? Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Johnson has a question.
I just want to just make a note that, you know, it appears that from my staff here that they did make the proper notification, that the attorney was aware, Mr. Bullard at least was aware. So I just do want to make sure we put that on record.
Thank you, sir. I agree with you on that one.
Thank you. And at this time, this will conclude the hearing for Stephen Grant, ADC number 089989. And we'll go off record, and thank you for all who have participated, Dr. Stock, Mr. Moore, Mr. Shaver, and fellow board members.
Thank you.